Hey everyone, I'm your host Piers Kicks, and welcome back to Metaverse Musings, which is a research-focused podcast that's part of Delphi Digital. We explore the integral components behind what many believe will be the internet's successor, a virtual extension of the natural world where most of us will eventually live, work, and play. To some, it represents our next great milestone as a network species, and to others, it is something to fear. With our guests, we discuss the technology, philosophy, and culture behind this brave new world. If you're not yet subscribed to the Delphi Research Portal, then I fear for your soul. You're missing out on the most incisive analysis that the digital asset space has to offer. Seriously, check it out. Nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. This podcast features sponsors, and any ads are not an endorsement by Delphi Digital and are for informational purposes only.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Metaverse Musings. I'm delighted to introduce you all today to Artur, who is the founder and CEO of Somnium Space. Artur, thank you for joining us.
Hey Pierce, thank you for having me.
Could you please kick us off by explaining what Somnium Space is?
Oh man, I've done it so many times. Somnium is, we call ourselves a highly immersive virtual reality platform. Where the economy and the ownership is built on the blockchain. So basically it's a virtual reality world where you can create, you can live, you can exist, you can have fun, you can have business, and all of the stuff you own, all the stuff you trade is running through the NFTs of the blockchain.
Very cool. So can you give us a bit of background, I guess, kind of what you're doing before starting this project? What led up to this for you?
Sure. I mean, I've been roaming virtual worlds since like 1999, when I was like, 14 or, basically I've been playing like Ultima Online and Second Life and, reading all these fantasy books and science fictions regarding what the world would be. I'm an investment banker by studies. So I've worked as a trader for 10 years. And yeah, and then I've tried the early versions of virtual reality headsets, of the consumer ready virtual reality headsets, and that blew my mind. And that made me realize that actually, everything I was dreaming about will actually become a reality within the next 5 years. So I've tried the headset in 2017. We're basically here. And from that moment on, I was not able to think about anything else than this, the big world where everybody exists and have fun and they're fully immersed in VR. And that's exactly what we're building at Somnium.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love it. I think we first connected almost sort of 2 years ago now, I think, in Discord. And I mean, the amount of sort of functionality that's been built out since then is pretty crazy. Can you tell us a bit, I guess, about how you built the conviction to go out and sort of build this project and what kind of, pushed you over the edge? I mean, you mentioned doing a bunch of reading, but, you seem to have alluded to some perceived imminence of this stuff just then. You said over the next 5 years, it's going to happen. Like, what was it for you that really suggested that?
Yeah, I think it was the VR experience I've had. So in 2017, I had this early chance to test kind of like the pre-production earlier version of HTC Vive with full room scale tracking, and it just blew my mind. It used to be the best VR headset out there, and I think at many points it still is, which is crazy. Just the level of immersion I got during that like 15 minutes presentation was mind blowing. I've literally was not able to think about anything else after that. I was just thinking. I just realized that these devices will be on each person's table within the next 5 years. Like that literally wasn't like you would have a mobile phone and you would have a virtual reality headset and you would have your PC or laptop, whatever. And that would be the experience you would want to have on a daily basis. So I was convinced right there. And then I started to search, around and think like, who is actually building something like that? Like, is there anyone building a vast virtual reality world? I didn't find many. I think I didn't find any at the time. So I decided to start building my own. And that's how I kind of like how I created the company.
And then in terms of your expectation of, the pace of adoption of these technologies, how's that kind of turned out in your mind? I mean, I've been using VR for many, many years. I think obviously most recently with the Quest and all of the headsets that have been sold through there, we're starting to see some reasonable adoption. But how do you reflect on like where we are in that journey and how long until, it really is your mobile and a VR device for everyone?
I think we're actually doing all right. Many people think that we are, or not they don't think we aren't, but they think we are slower than we should be. And the reason for that it's like many companies just thought or created this over expectation hype around it, that, it will actually come much quicker. I've been always kind of grounded to that. I knew it will come, and it will come, and it's already coming. It's becoming mainstream. But it's never this thing where it just comes from, especially with hardware products, it doesn't come from, 1 year to another. You have from zero to, billions of people. You have to get there technologically. And I think we're getting there. Technology has to mature, and it's doing really well in terms of what kind of headsets we're getting, what kind of prices we're getting, and in terms of user base. So all of that is actually right now combined doing really, really well. And the inflection point is right upon us, if not already happening. So I think the growth is great, and the experiences and the headsets and hardware and the companies which are coming into this market are actually fantastic.
We love to hear it. We love to hear it. So can you talk us through, I guess, like the history of Somnium Space so far? You had this idea a few years ago following this experience that compelled you to action and you couldn't think about anything else. So like, where did you start? What are the kind of key milestones so far? And then, I guess just a bit of commentary on where we're at right now would be cool.
Yeah, I've decided to go to VR meetups. I'm not a coder myself. And I've started to go to VR meetups. I started to see and talk to people, what's around. And then kind of like grew my network. And then I started to kind of create hire some designers and some visual artists to kind of get the concept art of what I had imagined into one place. So that came together, then it kind of like forged more precisely my vision. Then I hired a bunch of engineers and started to work on actual VR experience. And, once we had version one, I'm always about, product first, like showing people real product. So once we had version one, we've published it on Steam in 2018. We've got quite a positive response. People loved the idea. People loved the vision. The core community forged right at that time. Then we ran a few crowdfunding campaigns. People really supported us. Then we had an early investment from the angel, from the VC, a smaller VC. I funded the first development round of Somnium. I funded entirely myself from our family funds. And then we took it from there. So, community grew. We started to add functionalities. We started to deliver on our promises, methodically all every day or every month. We were adding new features. And that's basically how we continue till today. Every week or every 2 weeks, we just launch new features. We deliver new capabilities and make our world better. And that's how we kind of progress in the future.
So how do you kind of think about yourselves versus perhaps some of these other virtual worlds out there? Obviously, you guys were born more out of this VR focus, but you're also, you've got the 2D sort of desktop client, and now increasingly you're working on some web-based stuff too. Like, how do you think of yourselves versus some of the other virtual worlds that are blockchain-based out there right now?
I think we're very different from that, and as you rightfully said, I always said in every interview, we're a virtual reality company first, and we were always were and we will always be. Our core experience is in VR. When I say we're a highly immersive platform, this is not just a hype word; it's true. Like when you go in your headset into Somnium, into virtual reality world, into persistent world. You look up in the sky, you see all the real-time lighting, all the spatial audio, you know, all the procedurally generated random weather, which is, you know, the same for everybody else, and all the buildings, you know, kilometers and kilometers away. You kind of realize that this is like a really different thing than anything else. And all the things around it is for us to complement the VR experience, right? So for example, we have a web, Somnium web client. This is a tool for people to share their creations instantly, right? So to answer your question, how to compare ourselves, I guess I always say like the main common thing we have with like CryptoVoxels or Decentraland or Sandbox is that we sell land on the blockchain, and the rest is very different, very much different. In terms of how we approach our experience, how they approach their experience, they're more web-based. Their style is different. We're more client-based, also web-based, but we go for realism. We try to incorporate like some deep technology, like spatial audio, VR, of course. Every product of ours has a VR experience. So even if Somnium Web, you can click the button and you'll be in VR immediately. So all those things kind of are different from what others are offering, let's say.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And then can you kind of talk us through some of the different aspects of the Somnium ecosystem, you know, beyond these different client types and whatnot? You know, it's a pretty huge world. You guys are often having sort of events, whether those are like cinema events or disco events. Can you shed some color on the types of things you guys get up to in there?
Yeah, I think, you know, the main part for us is, you know, when you build tools for people, and that's our main goal, we try to build the best tools out there for people to create. And once you give them tools and, you know, to creators, and you tell them, look, this is the tool you can go and you can create. And hey, this is another tool you can actually monetize it with. And when you convert those two, then magic happens. And a good example is we've launched this ability, like in the beginning of the year, we've launched this ability for people to create full body VR avatars and mint them directly from Somnium client, you know, with one click of a button. So you don't need to be a blockchain engineer to actually mint your avatar. You just have your avatar uploaded through our SDK, you click the button, it's tokenized, boom, it lands in your wallet. And then whoever buys your avatar can use it, or that your token can use this avatar instantly inside Somnium Space. They don't need to know any software at all. So that seamless experience led to, you know, creators selling over $300,000 worth of avatars within that period. And we're very proud about that. And, you know, things like that are actually important. So we've recently released Builder SDK. So now people can upload any kind of experience on their land parcels. And we went beyond that. We actually now releasing the world's SDK, which means that everybody can buy an NFT of the world and then create the world inside the world of Somnium Space. So that's kind of like a crazy idea where you can actually upload any game inside Somnium, so that Somnium becomes kind of like your menu for thousands of other worlds which people will create. So that's kind of our thinking. Give people tools to create, and they will create, because people want to create, people want to share their creativity, and also they want to monetize.
I love that. How do you think then about building a sort of obviously VR focused, but also crypto infused sort of platform of this scale? What are kind of the scalability constraints and sort of user experience constraints that you have to work through? I guess, were there any sort of unexpected difficulties along the way? If you could perhaps give some color on that.
I must say people talk about that and they give it, they kind of give it more emphasis that they should in at this stage at least, right? So I am very much for, you know, an organic growth. So we at Somnium, we basically don't spend much money at all on advertising. Like everything we've achieved so far, and we're like, what, I think we're 11th biggest NFT project upon sales in the world right now, or in OpenSea, but I guess that means the world. So we've achieved organically. And I think we grow our user base growth organically in a controllable way. We are not in a hockey stick yet, which is fine. And also the tools which we are developing and also other third parties are developing in terms of the blockchain ecosystem, they're also maturing at the same time. So when people tell me, you know, what if there will be millions of transactions happening in Somnium, how would you, you know, scale it on Ethereum? I mean, of course, we have a Polygon as our partner and they're great guys. And we are, you know, we're building some very cool tech in terms of, you know, having seamless transactions in VR. But apart from that, like I will say, yeah, let's get there. Let's get to those million transactions. And while we get there, there will be much more robust tools, you know, to use for people in the Web3 ecosystem. So yes, many things we build ourselves, but also many things will mature in the market. And if the technology is good enough when the people want to use that, and I think blockchain and Web3 in general, it is, then there will be tools to solve all the problems, literally all the problems. They will be solvable. So there is not an end of the world. You don't need to hurry up and try to solve problems which don't exist right now. And we approach that way. We just do one step at a time.
Makes sense. Could you talk through, I guess, kind of the decisions you made so far in terms of infrastructure stack? Like, where are you guys building? How's it all set up? Obviously, you're using Steam for your distribution. But yeah, we'd just love to get an idea of what the tech stack looks like right now.
Yeah, in regards to Steam, I think we've realized very quickly, and I realized very quickly that I don't want something to be dependent on any platform. Like, I don't want anyone, any big guys in terms of like Oculus or Valve or any other company to be our gatekeeper. So majority of people, thankfully, right now download Somnium from our website, so the client, and also access Somnium via web client, like literally thousands of people per day. So that is fine. And this is exactly what I want it to be. And we have, of course, like a 10-year plan, which many parts of that I cannot share right now, but there is a clear plan how we want to approach that and how we want to control the experience of our users directly with our users. And in terms of this tech, yeah, I mean, we are on Steam. We run, you know, on Azure a service. Microsoft is our official partner. We're part of their Microsoft Startups program. We're one of the few companies that we're actually really rare in their ecosystem. Not only we're a blockchain company, but we're also, you know, a Central European company. We were one of the first or the first Eastern European company which was accepted to that. And we have a great time with them. They're a great company. So yeah, we are trying to kind of build fundamentally and get ready to that scaling. But again, doing one step at a time, not trying to solve all the problems at once, but really approaching methodically, like one problem, solving this and then going to another problem, because we're still, you know, a young startup, we're growing, we're expanding the team. But again, it also takes time to grow the team, you know, from 10 people to 20 people. So exactly this, not sure what you mean exactly by the technical stacks we use. You know, we program a lot of things ourselves. We have our own backend written. We work on our, you know, on our own smart contracts, you know, how to tokenize things from the client. So all of those things come into one experience.
Very cool. Yeah. And then, you know, you mentioned sort of solving these problems one by one, seems like a very pragmatic approach. What would you say are some of the biggest sort of challenges that Somnium faces and how are you guys thinking about overcoming them?
I think right now it's making all of the experiences we have and all of the technology which is available for our users. Let's call it more user-friendly. I don't know if it makes sense. So it's kind of like polishing the experience which we've already got and streamlining into one seamless experience, right? Because we have, you know, already three SDKs live. We have, you know, we have three clients basically running out there, and just connecting those together so that the user journey is much more smooth and fluid from step one to step, you know, 10 or 100. So that's the biggest challenge, I would say, because, you know, we are a startup. We are throwing features like literally every week. And there are some very big and fundamental features, but not all people know how to access them immediately, right? Like documentation, for example, you know, even like the menus, the options and all of those things, they take a lot of time, right? It takes a lot of time on the team to design those things, to polish them after we release them. So I think that's the main part, kind of consolidating all those features and making it more seamless. And on the other hand, still continuing to work on the economical aspect where people are able to seamlessly trade within VR, whether they're selling furniture or they're, you know, minting furniture and they're minting art or minting tickets or creating some new worlds, which are huge. Interconnecting them into one economical kind of like homogeneous experience, that's another challenge which needs and takes time to actually develop and create, but we are well underway there. And many people like that would this situation creates the thing that not many people or not all people understand, you know, the full vision, which is fine, but then when we connect those things together, they start to realize how big the vision is, and many people understand, oh my god, okay, that's the whole picture. Okay, I'm gonna stick at Somnium and I'm gonna do it because I'm gonna invest my time and money and my work to actually create my fundamental basis in here, my home, my virtual home in Somnium, because it will grow that way and it will allow me to do many more things in the near future. So communicating that vision is sometimes a challenge, but yeah, we're doing it, trying to do it, of course.
Absolutely. And so, you know, going back to where you touched upon the original kind of inspiration, it definitely felt like it was very sort of VR driven. Can you talk a bit about, you know, where the excitement around blockchain came into it? Obviously, you know, from my perspective, that's a large enabler, whether that's, you know, sort of, again, the sort of economic streamlining around creator economics or obviously NFTs themselves being able to track these assets. Like, what was that journey for you? How did you realize it was integral to the vision? And yeah, I guess curious about how all of that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as I said, I've been in virtual worlds since 1999, right? And I've been economically active in them. So, I mean, Ultima Online, 2000, selling, buying potions, horses, special weapons, armors, and stuff like that for real dollars and exchanging them. That was a kind of usual experience for me in 2000s, where like nobody actually knew what the hell virtual worlds are. We were already trading things, you know, and I knew, for me, it was absolutely normal that a special armor can have a, you know, a real dollar price of $150, and that it was absolutely normal to actually pay that price. So that was nothing new to me, and for thousands and, you know, tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people at that time. So I've kind of like lived in those worlds, and then I went to Second Life and I experienced the economy there. I used to be a DJ in Second Life, so I played it. You know, I experienced everything firsthand. But I also saw a big problem in those worlds that ultimately, somehow, they grew too big, and the centralization of everything became a huge problem, because suddenly those companies had to do some decisions which kind of led to some destruction of their own economy. It's hard to explain, but it also happens to corporates, right? When the companies, it's kind of like huge, it becomes too big, and then it starts to fail on its own because of that. I think those things happened. And also I saw the struggle, not only from the company perspective, but I also saw the struggles from the user perspective, where you literally live in those worlds and you work in those worlds for like 5, 7, 10 years. And then suddenly, because of a mistake or whatever, your account gets banned and you lose everything. Like literally everything you work for 10 years, you lose in one day or in 1 hour, in one click. So those things led me think to that, you know, the economy, what do we have to do in Somnium to make sure that the economy and the Somnium space as a company stays here for another 100 or 200 years, as long as, you know, we can imagine. Definitely, it should not be a centralized economy. It should be something where users are partly or fully in control. And right about like 2018, there was this craze of ICOs, which I didn't like much because there were so many scams and people were just grabbing money and promising, you know, mountains, but delivering not even stones. So that kind of like was skipped. But then we started to talk inside the company more and more about, you know, the NFTs when they came in. And that's when we got, you know, to know the OpenSea guys. And that's where discussion started. And that's, you know, where we saw an extreme feat to what we need to do. And we saw that the technology is already mature enough that the actual technology actually delivers use case, not only the hype. And yeah, that's where we started to work on our own NFTs, minting them, preparing them, and kind of incorporating that into the Somnium economy. That's how we started in the NFT world.
Love it. I love it. I mean, obviously you guys are pretty, well, very early movers in this space on that blockchain side of things, being integrated into virtual worlds. And then again, you know, you say you've kind of spent a lot of time over the years in different virtual economies. Can you kind of reflect a bit more on, at a high level, your thoughts around this transition from sort of closed to open economies across virtual environments? Like, you know, what are the primary adoption drivers? Like, how do those competitive dynamics play out as incumbents figure out how to, you know, grapple with these forces? What's that process going to look like?
Yeah, I think, first of all, when we talk about that, we should really understand, and everybody, and I'm always like that, I'm always saying it the way it is. When someone claims today that they're fully decentralized, it's just an outright lie. There's no technology at the moment today to build a world like Somnium Space, for example, in a fully decentralized manner. If we talk about servers, hosting, you know, networking, audio servers, and things like that, it's just impossible. So the main challenge is to, how do we get from centralized entity to a decentralized entity? Which steps do we need to take actually to get there? So we decided that the first big step should be decentralization of ownership and economy, right? So you own your tokens, they're in your wallet, and you can do with them whatever you want. That's a very important part, because suddenly you realize that no matter what, you can move those tokens, you can sell those tokens, you can control the you know, whatever you belong, you belongs to you, and you're in charge. But there are many more steps to come, right? The server technology, for example, how do you host these vast worlds on a decentralized network? The technology today doesn't exist for that. It just doesn't. There's no fully fledged technology which can support this cloud-based experience. So this is the next step. Once this comes online, whether it will be done by a third party or whether we would just decide to build ourselves, we'll see. But that's another step towards kind of like a big decentralization dream. And then we'll take it, you know, we'll take, again, as I always say, one at a time, we'll take those challenges and we will solve those problems. And we will come to a point where, you know, 95% of the Somnium experience will be fully decentralized, that no entity or a government in the world will be able to take Somnium Space down, nor myself. And I think that's the point we want to get, so that the economy and the world is living by itself. And I think the best example today in terms of the decentralized network is still Ethereum. It's the most centralized network in the world. And I think it will stay like this for a while. So yeah, it's kind of like thriving to that point, but it will take years and years to get there. So all the users have to realize that, yes, there is a big part of centralization in any experience, especially in metaverse experiences today. You just need to accept that and not to believe that, you know, everything is fully decentralized and, you know, nothing can happen. Of course, things can happen. And companies, and, you know, I'm in charge of Somnium Space. Somnium Space is the company. There are still, you know, things which company has to do as a central entity to make sure that Somnium runs. And we never say it differently. We're always upfront with that. So, yeah, I hope I answered your question.
Sure, no, very much so. I appreciate the color on that front. I mean, obviously, I also agree. It just makes sense to to sort of prioritize the economic component beforehand, because that's the most material one. When as you say, people are coming and spending time and money and energy in these worlds, they want to have assurances around that. First and foremost. So, yeah, I guess just elaborating a little bit on that though. How do you think about that transition period almost? Because I'm of the view that as economies of that nature emerge at scale, no consumer is going to want to go and do the one where you're completely at the mercy of the game host anymore. So how do you think the process will look in terms of bigger game publishers sort of waking up to that and beginning to participate in that fashion?
Right. I was actually asked this question several times in the last 2 weeks. I guess that's also that also gives you a sign what's happening. But I think it will happen the same way how many big technological transformations are happening or happened in the past. We will see a lot of companies will just slip on it and will not understand it until it's too late. Some companies will adapt, and then there will be a point at time, and it's hard to say when. I think in the next 5 years, where there will be a consolidation in terms of that bigger companies will try to start or will start buying smaller companies to try and catch up. So it will be either talent acquisitions or takeovers, or technological acquisitions. But some companies will dismiss it completely. Some companies will try to do their own thing. And some companies will try to, close partnerships or buy the companies to actually build on top of the technology. The magic about all of the transitions with, big new tech, and it always was like that and will stay like this, is that they dismiss it because it's small until it's too late. They will say, yeah, okay, how many, like any executive in any bigger publisher company will say, okay, well, give me a number of how many users per day use, NFT-based worlds, right? And they will go to, Decentraland, Somniuspace, CryptoVoxels, and Sandbox, and they will say, I don't know, a few thousand, 5,000, and they'll say, okay, we ourselves, GTA, we have 25,000 people only in one lobby every second, we don't care about those people who have 5,000. And that's exactly the magic. They will dismiss it until it's too late, until the economical and the user impact is too big. And then it will start to try to catch up. And that's where the a little bit of earthquake on the market will happen. I'm absolutely convinced that, Web3 enabled companies will take over the internet and the experiences in the next decade or two, for sure. And not because I'm a maximalist, it's just because the technology is better. It allows more freedom-oriented experiences, whether we're talking about metaverse or whether we're talking about other services. It becomes more peer-to-peer experiences. It gives more control to users while allowing companies to actually economically thrive, which is important. And it's just a better technology. And it's a decentralized technology. There's no central equity entity which could control at all the times every decision of every person, which is great. So that's why when, fundamentally it offers a better experience, it will ultimately thrive. Again, not all companies are seeing it in the right now. Companies like Facebook, Twitter, they're doomed. They're absolutely doomed. And I think in terms of Facebook, what I see, how they do it with VR right now, they kind of realize that they're doomed because of many other threats. I don't think they think about Web3 as a threat, but they think about governmental threat and, anti-monopolistic threats and things like that. They know they're doomed. They're just trying to figure out what they will earn their money next on and how will they transition and not die. But because Web3 is such an enabler, I think we'll see new, bigger companies emerge from that revolution within the next 10 years. And yeah, absolutely, there will be new big players coming up and staying here for a while.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. And just on that point there, I would be curious as well. Obviously, you're very big in the whole VR world. the role that Facebook is playing through Oculus in terms of sort of moving the industry forward, it feels to me is like a pretty big one. And you know, usually I'm a naysayer towards anything Facebook, but a part of me feels that I do need to concede the good work that they're doing there. Like, can you comment on that at all in terms of the role they're having in advancing the medium?
Oh yeah, so technologically and in terms of engineers and people who are working in Oculus to push the research and development of VR forward, they're brilliant. Okay, they have one of the best people in the world to work on that, and in terms of that, they're doing an amazing job. Now, that being said, in terms of strategic company decisions Facebook is making on behalf of Oculus, it's absolutely horrible for VR industry, right? So things like, and it feels to me, and I don't know, again, I don't know exactly, I don't see it Mark's brain, inside his brain, but maybe thanks God. But, you know, it feels to me that the push to lock people into their ecosystem is coming like 1 year too early. All the decisions I see they're making, like, okay, forcing you to log in with Facebook, why now? Why not in 1 year? Why not giving people more time to actually accommodate more in their ecosystem? Because they literally have zero competition right now in the market. So why this push? Why to make them even more angry? And then now we see that Facebook is testing or starting to test in July, placing ads inside the game in VR. That's another push. You know, that's another push, which is, again, 1 year or even 2 years too early. Why now? To me, the only answer I can find out right now is that they're kind of feeling desperate because they need to find new business models. But that leads me to believe that it's kind of like strange because Facebook is still earning quite a lot of money per quarter. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But what I know is that it is impossible to have only one player like Facebook controlling this very important experience. VR is a very important technology for the future of humankind. Like, literally, it is one of the most important, and AR will be as well, but I put them in one kind of basket. Mm-hmm. This technology there has to be more better alternatives than there's just what we are presented with Oculus. Yes, Facebook can, you know, throw a lot of money in it and can subsidize the hardware, and that's why you can get an Oculus Quest for $299. The real price of this is probably like $699 or $799. But there has to be more competition, and the future of VR has to be more open, and the future of VR has to be more more decentralized in a way that you should have control over what you do and how you control your data in VR, because you have to realize Facebook is collecting 1,000 more data points every time you use Oculus Quest than they do when you use Facebook app on your mobile phone. Like, literally, it's 1,000-fold. All your movements, all your eye gaze later on, all your controller movements, all your environment, all the cameras are recording all the time. These things are valuable. And if we see that they are actually going to sell ads on top of that, I mean, you see where we're going, and that's not a good future. So, yeah, there has to be more competition on that front, and I'm very positive that this competition is coming.
Absolutely. Well, no, I really appreciate the color there. Couldn't agree more on all of that. I think already it's I felt extremely aggravated by the ecosystem, but then just seeing, you know, the sort of economics now from a developer's perspective of going straight and doing, you know, Quest first versus even PC VR and stuff. There are all sorts of tricky dynamics at play, but I'm glad you're positive about where it's all going. So we'll see how the hardware landscape evolves. I'm curious, when you're in this headspace, thinking about where we're going, you know, you're already talking on multi-decade timelines. You just then mentioned how, you know, important this technology is for the future of mankind. Could you give some color on like what you see as some of the really exciting and interesting and crazy long-term ideas for where this is all going, the fusion of all these Web3 technologies and this wicked new medium? What does that world look like in 30, 40 years?
Yeah, I think even not in 30, 40, I think like even 10 to 12 years. I think that in like 10 years, we would see bigger part of population spending 3 or more hours in VR a day. I think some countries and cities will evolve around VR first. And by this, I mean, you would have, and I will explain why, but you would have cities literally where all the infrastructure, including housing and flats and everything, will be built around VR first. So you would have small flats with amazing delivery services and remote services on literally everything you need for, you know, for your life. So from medicine to food, and other, you know, things you need. And those cities will evolve, and there will be, you know, majority of people in those cities will be spending most of their daytime inside virtual reality headset, inside virtual reality worlds, transacting, earning their living, and spending their money in VR, and just, you know, spending a bare minimum needed to actually have a, you know, decent life in terms of food and a safe and a good flat. So that, and I know many people will think it's crazy, but I think that's happening. And the reason for that is that Web3, together with VR, is a huge kind of liberator and enabler. So suddenly, people from all over the world who had no access and will have no access to, you know, to a free travel, like, for example, we have in Western countries, you know, we can travel, we can book a ticket and fly and things like that. There are many, many people, millions and billions of people in the world who don't have that access. They don't have this ability, but suddenly they will have, because they'll have this $400 or $200 headset, which they will just put on their head, and they will have, they'll be able to have any kind of experience they want. And most importantly, and more importantly, they will be able to be productive and be present inside the economical aspect of the virtual worlds. They will be able to earn money. They will be able to earn living and control their finances through those, you know, through those metaverses, through that metaverse. And that is huge, because they will not need to ask any gatekeeper whether they can participate and earn money. They will be doing it, and they will be, you know, it will be only dependent on how skillful and how hardworking they are. And it won't matter where they're coming from, what's their background, you know, how old they are, what's the skin color, it doesn't matter. They will all be a part of one big virtual society, and they will be doing it. And I think this will be a huge shift. This will actually shift countries and governments, and this will shift everything. This will change the way how we think about it. And I can go even further, and I can say that for many, many people, they will spend, and we see it already in Somnium, for example, right? They will earn, because many people think right now, okay, if they will earn $20,000 per month in VR by being in VR and working in VR, oh, then they will go and spend, you know, those money on some real life villas or like real life restaurants and think that, oh, no. Those people will care about their virtual possessions and virtual beings more than they will care about their real life. So my personal prediction is when those people will, you know, who never had money, suddenly will start earning money inside virtual worlds, they will actually buy and spend majority of that money back inside the virtual worlds and only spend a crucial amount for their food and stuff. So that's the future I see, just because it's a huge enabler for everyone to kind of be on the plane level and exist inside those worlds and have those experiences which they will literally never been able to have in real life.
Absolutely, it's all super interesting. I like the idea of it being like a, you know, all retained within that virtual economy. Obviously, there are some people that when you describe the things that you just did, suggest that, you know, in some way that might be sort of degrading the human experience and that we're going to lose touch with the natural world. You know, people on the flip side then also argue that, you know, the reality of a lot of people's lives is that they, you know, don't live in super great environments, and it's actually, you know, a dramatic improvement. Yep. I wonder whether you can comment on it from that kind of philosophical lens.
Oh, I can. I don't even need to comment from that on from the philosophical lens. I can comment from them from the experiential lens, which I've seen in some of them happening already. We've seen literally tens of people and hundreds of people who came into Somnium, and they were shy. They were not able to speak in public. They were they were kind of like, let's call it, it's the classical example of like kind of like an antisocial person, but in a good way, you know, in a good way. But those people were not able to, they were not kind of visiting any big parties in real life. So they were kind of like by themselves. And suddenly, day by day in VR, they became more and more open. And then you saw that person became a great singer, and they were able to sing, and we didn't know it. And they kind of opened up to the community, and they were able to, you know, to laugh and joke and speak to us. And, you know, their other person started to have a kind of like a full-time job there and here. So suddenly you see those people become more social. So the notion of that VR, it's kind of like antisocial and diminishes the real life experiences. That's not true. I think it's a complementary thing. And as you said, many people right now in the world are living in quite poor conditions. So for them to be able to visit and to be productive in virtual worlds will be a huge improvement. Like it would be thousands of percent of improvement over their real life at the time. And yeah, I think that's how it is. And of course, like one time I was presenting on the conference on a stage in the real life, how old school, but I do that sometimes. And someone in the audience asked me, like some woman asked me, like, why do you hate real life? I'm like, no, wait a second. You know, like I live in Prague. I love the city. It's an amazing city. I have great, you know, family and kids and wife and everything. I love real life, but I also love, you know, virtual experiences. It has nothing to do with hating real life. It's just that, you know, virtual world can offer something which real life cannot. And, you know, making this transition and having both experiences in my life makes my life better. So why, it's not one or another, it can be both. So that's kind of my answer.
Absolutely, I like that. It's actually a broadening of the human experience. You've got much more optionality in both the physical and the digital at that stage. It's very cool. What is one thing that's become clear to you since you started on this whole journey into VR and into crypto that you wish you'd known before?
That's a good question. Because it's hard to pinpoint one, but let me think what was the main one. I think that the main message is that when you're building something fundamental and long-term, there is no quick way and no quick path to, you know, to anything. Because I've seen it, especially in crypto, you can see those attempts, like you call them money grabs and things like that. And, you know, like you have to respect your users and you have to try to build fundamentally and to deliver continuously and kind of continue doing that, no matter where the market cycle is, no matter what people are generally thinking about this and that idea. And by people, I mean, not your core users, but you know, outsiders, let's call them that. So you have to continue. It's a grind. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. If your idea is, you know, if you believe in your idea, if you believe that that's the future, it's a huge marathon. So I think that's kind of like, I don't want to say I learned it because I kind of knew this before, but it proved me over and over again that that's true. You know, there's no quick ways to kind of get to the end point. And it's a marathon, and it's a great marathon because, you know, it's worth running.
Yeah, I really like that. And I think, you know, it's also a testament to you and the team, I guess, of maintaining that focus and conviction. I can imagine, you know, when you do see these other projects crop up that, you know, maybe skew a bit more towards the money grab side as well. It's even harder to, you know, probably can be frustrating to see. Switching gears a little bit to the closing questions here. What is your favorite video game ever?
Oh, I think I have to say Ultima Online, because just on a pure number of hours I spent in that, it was a life-changing experience for sure. Like literally, it taught me a lot of things. It taught me at the young age how to economically exist in the society, how to make friends and not lose friends, how to, you know, how to grind things and how to think strategically. So I would say that. Like I've played, you know, Counter-Strike, I played like League of Legends, and I played sometimes still. But I think literally Ultima Online was one of the best experiences I've had ever. And so I have to name that game. And yeah, kudos to Richard Garriott. And I had a blessing and chance to talk to him several times. So he's a great, amazing game creator. And yeah, so that will be the game for sure.
I love that. And just so we have a ballpark estimate, how many hours are we talking, do you reckon?
Oh, man. Tens of thousands. I don't know, because I remember I've literally there were months where my parents left for a business trip or something, and I've played so many hours that my internet provider at that time, because there were times where the internet was billed by hours, and I think for that month I bought an unlimited package or something like that. So literally, I had my internet provider called me after 20 days saying Arthur, you just broke all the records, including the corporate companies which had our line in terms of staying online and being active. Wow. Really? Okay. So yeah, it's tens of thousands of hours for sure.
Amazing. I love it. And then you obviously alluded to this original kind of Vive demo earlier on, but beyond just gaming, or it might be involved with a game, what would you say is the most impactful digital experience you've ever had?
It's a good question. Let me think about it for a second. Impactful digital experience. I think it has to be connected with either Ultima Online, just of how deeply it had an impact on me and how deep impact it was. And of course, VR, because, I've had experiences even, in Somnium concerts where it felt so real and it felt so surreal at the same time that I would never forget it, in a moment where, all the friends and community members were there, dancing, and the music and the performer was live performing in front of us. And we were all present there. You've heard some small talks happening on the side, and you've heard them very, not loudly happening in real life, that someone is talking on the bar, and you had those people laughing together, and you had those people dancing, and the performer was there, and the visual effects were all there live persistently. That's it's magical. It literally feels sometimes even more real than in real life. So I think that would be some of the experiences in Somnium I would never forget. And I just think that, there'll be more and more like that, but yeah. So VR would be the main point I would mention in that for sure.
Love that. And yeah, as you say, I guess obviously there'll be many, many more over the years, but that'll always be a fun nostalgia to the kind of first few times that you really felt that in there and had that total social presence.
For sure. I mean, sometimes I get goosebumps, literally from the experience we have. It just happens. And I'm not saying it to hype things not at all. It's just truly, I'm the biggest fan of technology we're developing. I'm the developer and also the biggest fan of that and a user. So, it all came from me wanted to be and live inside the world, inside that world. That's why I've kind of started to create that world, to be able to immerse myself and actually take part in that. So definitely this.
Well, yeah, definitely shows the passion on that front. Finally, out of all the books you've ever read, which one has resonated with you the most?
I think I should say Labyrinth of Reflections. This is by a Russian author. It is available in English. It's not Ready Player One. I mean, I've liked Ready Player One. I love the book. I also, like Snow Crash and stuff, but out of all the VR books, let's call them this, I think the biggest impact on me and kind of the biggest thing which sparked my imagination even further was Labyrinth of Reflections.
I have to check it out and yet to. Well, Arthur, I really appreciate you coming on and giving us your time. For those listening, where's the best place to follow along with what you're up to and what Somnium's up to?
Yeah, I think it's Twitter. Twitter at Somnium Space, or our Discord, which is discord.gg/somniumspace, and you'll find me there. I'm active every day, every hour. I hope not every minute, but yeah. So you'll find us there, and just hop into the world, hop into Discord, join one of the meetups. We have daily meetup every day inside Somnium VR client at 10 p.m. CT. In 4 minutes, it starts today, and I'll be there. I'm there every day. I've not missed once, unless, you know, when I was ill for 2 weeks when I had COVID. The rest, I'm every time there with community. And yeah, just find us there, talk to us, ask questions, and let's have some fun.
I love it. That's awesome. Arthur, thank you once again. It's been a pleasure. I'll be sure to follow along, and hopefully we'll have you on in the future to give us an actual video tour from inside the world, which is always very cool.
Thanks a lot for having me. It's always a pleasure to chat about these things. Thanks a lot, Pierce.